The second case for oral argument this morning is State of South Dakota versus Harvey Littlebrave Jr. The appellant is Mr. Littlebrave, who's represented by Julie Holfer, attorney from Sioux Falls, and for the appellee is Mr. John Strowman, Assistant Attorney General from Pierre. Ms. Holfer, you may proceed. You have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. The issue in this case is whether the 25-minute detention of Harvey Littlebrave after his vehicle was validly stopped on the interstate by Trooper Colt of the South Dakota Highway Patrol was unreasonable in violation of the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution and Article 6, Section 11 of the South Dakota Constitution. A brief review of the facts. On March 2nd of 2008, Trooper Colts of the Highway Patrol was traveling east or observed a suburban traveling east on the north side of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. He observed the suburban cross the fog line, drive onto the shoulder, and then cross the center line. Based upon this, Trooper Colts initiated a stop of the vehicle, and the stop was without incident and occurred at approximately 9:44 p.m. Trooper Colts was equipped with a microphone which would record audio, and in addition, his vehicle was recording video. But for some reason, the audio only worked when he was in his patrol car, so he can only pick up what was said when he was in his vehicle. But according to Trooper Colts, he asked the driver, who was Harvey Littlebrave Jr., for his license and insurance. Harvey Littlebrave was able to hand the trooper his driver's license, and his wife, Harvey's wife, who was the passenger in the vehicle, handed the trooper the rental agreement for the vehicle they were in. The vehicle was a rental. Trooper Cole testified that he noticed that they had three children with them, and they both appeared nervous and their hands shook. He did also testify, Trooper Cole, that it would not be unusual when dealing with law enforcement for people to be nervous. Trooper Colt asked Harvey to step back to his patrol vehicle, and Harvey was then placed into the vehicle at approximately 9:46 p.m. that evening. At that point, with the audio on, the trooper begins questioning Mr. Littlebrave about where he was going, where he was from, and what his purpose was for the trip that he was taking. Mr. Littlebrave indicated that he had started his trip in Washington, that's where he was from, that they were going to New York, that one of the things they were going to do was they were going to pray for a sick friend named Dimitri, and that they were going to be returning by plane the next Wednesday or following Wednesday. During that conversation, no investigation was conducted as to the reason for the stop of the vehicle, that being the crossing of the center fog line, until approximately between 9:48 and 9:49 p.m. when the trooper asked him, "Have you been driving for a while?" And Mr. Littlebrave responds, "All day." During this time, Trooper Pulse did not attempt, or it does not appear that he attempted to check the status of Mr. Littlebrave's driver's license or to determine if he had any warrants for his arrest. The trooper denied that he was able to complete writing the warning ticket that he told Mr. Littlebrave he was going to give him in the first 5 minutes that Mr. Littlebrave was in his car. According to the audio tape, at approximately 9:50 p.m., Trooper Colt sounds as if he is done with the warning ticket. And he says, "Again, sir, this is just a warning. There's no fine or anything associated with it. Make sure you keep it between the lines and slow down if you have to. I'm just going to check that the vehicle identification number, that it matches the rental agreement, and you can stay in here and stay warm." At that point, Trooper Colts checked the VIN, or vehicle identification number, which apparently matched. And at that point, he also questioned Mary Littlebrave, the passenger, and requested her driver's license. Trooper Colts then returned to his vehicle at approximately 9:53 p.m. And at that point, he once again began a series of questions regarding where Mr. Littlebrave is going, what he is going to be doing, and when he is returning to Washington. Apparently, Mary had confirmed Mr. Littlebrave's story that they were traveling from Washington to New York, but she mentioned that they were going to be meeting some friends in Connecticut. She also denied that anyone in New York was sick. She did confirm Mr. Littlebrave's said they were going to be coming back the following Friday, not on Wednesday. During this time in this series of questioning, Trooper Colts was apparently able to check Mary Littlebrave's driver's license in 4 minutes, because at approximately 9:57 p.m., he tells Mr. Littlebrave he's going to give Mary her driver's license back. The trooper then returns to his patrol vehicle after giving her her license back, and then repeatedly began to question Mr. Littlebrave about the presence of drugs in his vehicle. The trooper testified at the suppression hearing that he did this because of the somewhat conflicting answers that Mr. Littlebrave was traveling from Washington State to New York State, and that the vehicle had an odor of soap in it. Between 10 and 10:09 p.m., the questioning focuses on whether or not there are illegal drugs in Mr. Littlebrave's vehicle. At approximately 10:05, Trooper Colts testified that Mr. Littlebrave admitted to a personal use amount of drugs in his vehicle. This is in response to the trooper's statement that if he had a personal amount of marijuana, he would give him a ticket and he would be on his way. At this time, Trooper Colts had made no attempt to check the status of Mr. Littlebrave's driver's license or to check if he had any warrants for his arrest, although 20 minutes had elapsed since the time of the stop of the vehicle. At 10:09 p.m., Trooper Colts walked his drug dog, Roman, around Mr. Littlebrave's vehicle. And according to Trooper Colts, Roman gave a sit indication on the passenger side of the vehicle, which indicated that Trooper Colts then had probable cause to search. Subsequent search of the vehicle revealed a personal amount of marijuana in the console and 33.71 pounds of marijuana in the back area of the Suburban. Mr. Littlebrave was arrested and convicted of felony possession of marijuana. Mr. Littlebrave challenged the detention of his vehicle before his trial. Mr. Littlebrave contends that the 24-minute detention, in which time the trooper did not give him his warning ticket or even attempt to check the status of his driver's license or check for warrants, violated his Fourth Amendment rights. The Fourth Amendment provides the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. Unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause. The seminal case dealing with the Fourth Amendment in this issue is Terry versus Ohio. And that, in 1968, held that a police officer, under appropriate circumstances, may briefly detain a person for questioning if the officer reasonably believes that the person has committed or is committing a crime. The conduct constituting the stop must be justified at the inception, and the officer's actions must be reasonably related in scope to the stop.
Now, you're not challenging the stop,
no,
are you?
I'm not.
And you're not challenging the drug sniff, the drug dog indication either, as I take it.
I am not challenging that either.
And would you agree that once your clients told the officer that he did have a personal amount of marijuana in the car, that from then on the officer would have probable cause?
That would provide probable cause.
So how many minutes into the stop did that happen?
That occurred 20 minutes into the stop.
So really we're talking about a 20-minute time, aren't we, here instead of 24 or 25? Because once he says that, then the officer has probable cause, and that then the, he can go on and search the car.
That's correct. It is. Then it would be the 20 minutes. My argument to that would be that if it is an unreasonable or an illegal detention, just as if someone were to give consent to search a vehicle while they're illegally detained, that consent is not valid. So my argument would be, although he did admit to the personal amount, because of the illegal detention, that cannot be used.
It was too late. In other words, you're saying that the officer took too long to get to that question and answer, and it's the 20 minutes that you're really complaining about here, that there was no reason for the officer to detain him for 20 minutes before actually getting to that.
Right, and I don't know that I'm necessarily putting a timeline on it. My argument more is that when a vehicle is stopped, the investigation needs to focus on the reason for the stop and not simply turn into a drug investigation. And I'm not saying that it has to be 20 minutes or 25, and I'm not going to put an arbitrary time on that.
So under your theory, 2 minutes in a certain circumstance could be unduly lengthening the stop?
Under certain circumstances, I would argue that, yes.
Ms. Hofer, in this case, weren't there some indications that would lead to questions under the totality of the circumstances when he started putting together out-of-state license plates, the soap smell, the issue of disjointed answers or different answers to questions. None of these happen all at once. It's kind of a continuum. How do we break that out into a rule?
Right, thank you. And I understand the concern. My understanding was, and we do have what Trooper Cole says is the soap smell. They are traveling from Washington to New York, the somewhat conflicting answers. The trial court based its decision and its conclusions of law simply on the conflicting answers. And held that, but for the somewhat conflicting answers, the trooper should have allowed Mr. Littlegrave to go down the road quicker. But to address the other concerns, in terms of the soap smell, as I stated, the trial court did not base its decision on that, but that is a situation, if you were to have an air freshener, courts have also, troopers have, or law enforcement have also held that air fresheners can be a sign of drug use. And in terms of the New York, Washington, New York, I think that this court just recently held in State versus Har that basically if you're coming from what's considered a drug destination state does not necessarily provide reasonable suspicion to detain further or to provide reasonable suspicion to stop a car. So I guess I also want to focus on the conflicting answers. It's not until we get farther in that the conflicting or somewhat conflicting answers come up. And I'd like to point out, and one thing to notice is that the answers are really not that conflicting. Both the passenger and the driver state, we left from Washington, we're going to New York. Both the passenger and the driver state, we're driving there, we're going to be taking a plane home. The two things the thing that differs is what they say they're going to be doing. And I don't know that one is necessarily precludes the other. Mr. Littlegrave says we're going to be praying for a sick person named Dimitri, and his wife says we're also going to be stopping in Connecticut. And I don't know that one precludes the other, that one can't make another stop on the trip. In addition to that, the trooper was concerned because they gave different dates of departure, and Mr. Littlegrave explained that, stating, I'm hoping to leave on Wednesday. I have a job in Washington. I need to get back to it. I think it's something like Mrs. Littlegrave would like to stay until Friday. So I understand the court's concern and the totality of all of it, but I think if you look at each of those factors, they don't necessarily reach the level of a reasonable suspicion.
Isn't the law quite clear, though, that the officer is entitled to ask the destination and the purpose of the trip and follow up on inconsistencies?
That is correct.
So those minutes that were utilized doing that really don't count.
Well, and like I say, I'm not necessarily stating we have to put a timeline on the so many minutes.
Well, but in a way you are, because, I mean, I understand you don't want to say two or three, and we're not asking you to do that.
Right.
But we have to say, at the end of the day, we have to look at this and say, was this unreasonably long? And in order to come up with that answer, don't we have to eliminate the minutes that we're using were used for legitimate purposes, like where are you going, where are you coming from, why is there inconsistency, can I look at the rental papers, I want to check the VIN number, I'm going to do driver's license checks.
Sure.
All of those things are proper purposes, correct?
That is.
So when we look at the reasonableness at the end of the day, those minutes have to be excluded, don't they?
And I don't necessarily know that it's minutes to give us a certain timeline. I do agree that it is proper to ask for the driver's license, to check the driver's license status, to check for warrants, that it's okay to say where are you going, where are you from. My argument here is that the trooper did ask for the driver's license. At that point he says, I'm going to issue you a citation. My problem is he does nothing with that driver's license. He simply sits on it, does not do a check for any sort of warrant or to see if the driver's license is valid. Now, he does say...
He does later. He does a license check later.
Yes, that's correct. At approximately, I believe it's 10:08 p.m., he does conduct the license check for Harvey Littlebrick. He had conducted Mary Littlebrick's license check about 10 minutes prior to that. I don't know if that answered your question.
The trial court had some concerns, obviously, about the extended questioning. In fact, makes enters this. He says the trooper seems to be pushing the envelope in his procedures, engaging the driver and passenger in extended questionings about their trip and its details long before he makes any attempt to complete the purpose of the initial stop. Even though the trial court finds that, the trial court still approves of this. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, I would say that the trial court upheld the detention, although he did it equivocally. He said, under these circumstances, it's probably acceptable. He did not indicate that it was acceptable.
And obviously, the trial court sees a lot of these kinds of suppression motions, and there was something troubling, evidently, about this one.
Correct. And I can't speak for the trial court. I think what the trial court focused on is basically the detention and the detention in light of the language of the United States Supreme Court case, Illinois versus Cabela's. And in that case, the United States Supreme Court held that it's not illegal to do a drug sniff around a car when it's simply stopped for a traffic stop. What is illegal is that it cannot be done after the stop has been prolonged for the purpose of conducting the search, and stated a valid search can become unlawful if it is prolonged beyond the time reasonably required to complete the mission. Now, as the trial court pointed out, the trooper could have conducted his business in a whole different way. And the trial court's finding was that, but for the somewhat conflicting answers, Mr. Littlebrick should have been down the road a lot faster than he was. But what I would like the court to focus on is the fact that this stop occurred. The trooper apparently, I guess from the evidence in the record, the trooper did not do any sort of investigation in terms of why he stopped the vehicle. He stopped the vehicle for crossing the center line and crossing the fog line. And his investigation when he reaches his car really has nothing to do with that at all. It starts with the where are you from, where are you going, what are you going to be doing. And it wasn't until a couple minutes into it he mentioned something about are you tired, you've been driving a long time, and Mr. Littlebrave indicates yes. Now apparently there was no indication of drug use, alcohol use, any sort of impairments of that sort that would cause that, and that's why I believe the trooper indicated at that point that he was going to give him a warning ticket for the violation, and he was just going to check the VIN number and he would be on.
Well, surely you concede, though, he had the right to question to the point where he could ascertain that, whether the driver was impaired because of the alcohol or drugs.
That is correct.
Okay.
But he didn't question him about that. And I think that may be one of my points. I don't.
You mean he's got to ask him point blank, have you been drinking or are you high on drugs? He can't say where you're from just to see if their answers are coherent or if they're slurring their speech?
Sure. No, and I agree with that statement. That is correct. But from the record, I didn't see any other questions pertaining to why he would have crossed the center line. This court and obviously different set of circumstances, but this court in State versus Hayden discussed what can happen when an investigative detention or when an officer approaches a vehicle.
Two minutes? Yeah.
Okay. That case is completely different in the sense of the officer thought that he observed or he couldn't observe the expiration date on a temporary license. He stopped the vehicle, walked up to the car, and said, and didn't even make an attempt to look at if there was an expiration date and approached the driver. And this court upheld the trial court, stating that basically it has to be the least intrusive means possible. So look and see, was there an expiration date? Yes. At that point, the officer shouldn't even approach the vehicle. My point is how is this so different? We have a valid traffic stop, but why can the trooper turn that valid traffic stop into however long of a detention, not even focusing on the reason why they stopped the vehicle, that being the crossing of the center line? And this court looked at that in hand and said basically there wasn't a reason to stop or to even engage the driver in a conversation. But here we have a situation where we have a 20-minute conversation, and that is not even focusing one bit on why they stopped the vehicle.
Are you aware of any cases that say that the officer has to conduct the traffic stop investigation in a particular order? In other words, are there any cases that say you have to do the why were you weaving before you do the destination and purpose of the trip questioning and the driver's license check and the rental paper check? Are you suggesting that has to be done in a particular order?
I don't have any authority to cite for that, that it has to be done in a particular order, but I think just a general reading of Cabela's and the case law that has followed that indicate that the purpose of the questioning needs to focus on the reasoning for the stop. And I think that needs to be foremost when the officer stops the vehicle.
Would that go into the question of whether or not it was a reasonable detention? Wouldn't that be one of the facts that you would then consider on whether it was reasonable?
If the officer investigated the reason for the stop.
Right.
Yes, I would agree.
Your time has expired, Counsel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Stroman, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Please, Court, Counsel. I'd like to pick up, first of all, where Counsel left off, discussing the case of Hayen. And what is the distinction between it and this case? Hayen involved a license tag that had was wondered whether it was expired. It was actually blocked, so the officer couldn't see it when he stopped the vehicle. Upon getting out of the vehicle, he could inspect from the outside whether that correct license tag was on or not. He didn't do that. He went instead directly to the driver and began asking questions. That is the huge distinction. As Justice Meyer Henry put out, stated that there are situations where an officer is permitted to make contact with the driver prior to an investigation when the purpose has something to do where there is a contact involved. And that's what is the situation here. We have a driver who is passing in and out of their lane. So as a result, the trooper is going to be concerned, what is the basis of the erratic driving? Is it drugs, alcohol, exhaustion? But with that, I would ask that I would start through some of the law so that we really can set forth the standard on these type of detention cases and then walk through the timeline and how it affects this particular case. Justice Conacam wrote in Ballard that to detain a driver any further, there must be reasonable, articulable suspicion that the individual is involved in criminal activity that is not the basis of the stop. All right? And this determination of the suspicion is based upon a reasonable objective test stated in Ballard and De La Rosa as a totality in light of the officer's experience. In this case, we have an officer.
Just let me interrupt you, though. Doesn't that become the issue, though, is how long can they detain him in order to develop reasonable suspicion when it doesn't have anything to do with the stop itself? That's the real question here.
Exactly. The Chief Justice wrote in De La Rosa that the totality of the circumstances is the basis to determine the constitutional reasonableness of the detention. So, when we look at what took place in total, rather than particular isolation, that will become the objective basis to determine whether or not the detention is constitutionally reasonable. I think the state's primary case on this is State v. Wilson. And it said the trooper became suspicious after 15 minutes of questioning Neff. Neff had constricted eyes, pupils. It said the trooper engaged in discussions about his employment, birth date, drug issues. Chief Justice wrote that in determining whether a law enforcement officer permissibly extends a traffic stop, we look at the evidence as a totality in light of the officer's experience. As I was saying, that the particular officer in this case is a canine officer, has extensive background with reference to drug investigations. Trey Case goes on to state that the trooper developed a reasonable suspicion of drug use after telling Neff he was free to go down the road. All right, the timing of this is very important. The timing of the continual suspicion and issues coming up in this case are very important. I would disagree with the concept that there is a stopwatch involved here, that there needs to be a determination of how many minutes are acceptable. The standard under Kenyon is reasonable suspicion. In Kenyon, the case is cited U.S. v. Foley, and where it states that the United States Supreme Court has specifically rejected any hard and fast time limit regarding Terry stops. In Foley, there was a 30-minute detention waiting for a dog to arrive.
But, Mr. Strelman, this is a pretty minor traffic violation. It just goes over the fog line. At some point, I think 2 hours or something for a fog line violation by itself would become unreasonable, wouldn't it?
What we have, first of all, is we have a crossing of a fog line,
right,
crossing of a center line, crossing of a fog line, back in the lane and the stop. A trooper, I believe, is, and there's no question because it also appellate specifically states that they're not questioning the stop. The question becomes the continuation of the detention based on the ongoing determination by the trooper if there is criminal activity separate from the initial stop. So since the initial stop is no longer a question by the appellant's own admission and statement in their brief, we go on to examine the issues as they develop. Is there a continuing reasonable, articulable suspicion by the trooper to continue the detention? And with that, I'd like to go through that timeline as that's examined. As counsel mentioned, 9:44, there was the stop of the vehicle. The trooper states that he notices duffel bags in the back of the vehicle, very lived-in appearance, that a little braid. Upon unrolling the window, strong sense of chemical soap. No specific issue by itself in isolation is terribly unusual. Three small children in the back of the vehicle. The fact that his wife is nervous upon getting the rental agreement and drops it upon handing it to him in isolation is not that unreasonable. A minute and 50 seconds after the stop, Little Brave is told that he is going to receive a warning ticket and comes back to the vehicle. A minute and 30 seconds after that, the trooper specifically asks who rented the vehicle, and he says his wife did. State v. Lockstead, okay, states that when there's a situation where the individual driving is not authorized on a rental agreement to be a driver, that does open the opportunity for continued questioning, paragraph 18 of Lockstead.
So what, excuse me again, what time frame was that? When the
That was at 9:47 and 20 seconds.
So
the stop was at 9:40 and 30 seconds.
So 3 to 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm. At about 3 minutes. So at a minute and 10 seconds after that, Little Brave is asked where he's going. He's asked about crossing the center lines and whether he's been driving for a while. All very legitimate questions with reference to impairment, danger, what is going on. Little Brave states that he's been driving all day. The trooper is beginning to prepare the ticket. His suspicions are increased as he looks at all the factors that he's had, including the strong smell of chemical, which his experience in training tells him is often used as a basis to try to mask the odor of illegal substances. Engages Little Brave in continued discussion as to the origin, destination of his trip. Little Brave states that his origin was state of Washington. Again, the trooper's experience and knowledge is that that is a state of drug origin. Finds out that the destination state is New York, a known state that is a receiving state. He asked him why he is going to New York. He's going to pray for
him. Is there a published list? I mean, we often hear this coming up, you know, when someone stopped, that they're coming from an origin state and they're going to a, but, you know, it's always sometimes different states. It's Virginia and Oregon, or it's California and Maine or something. So, I mean, is there a published list of this? I mean, so we can check this? Because it's, otherwise we're just getting the officer saying, well, this is what it is.
We're stating what the record is with the officer being an expert in drug and
we have to take their word for it that this is the case.
That's what the testimony of the trooper was.
And that's whether really it's really whether the trial judge believed him. That's what it comes down to.
Well, how do you? I'll ask you the same question. How do you address the trial court was troubled about the tactics here?
Well, the trial court stated at line 214 that had the passenger not given conflicting answers, the trooper should have, with reasonable speed, taken steps to complete the purpose of the stop. 215, he continued the investigation. His suspicions regarding drug trafficking, and in this case, the specific facts, are probably acceptable. So I think when I read the conclusions of the law of the judge, and specifically number 217, where he said, since the trooper's suspicions were raised only 5 minutes into the stop, this court does not fault the officer here for delaying the inquiry until later. So I think even though the court mentions some concerns, I think the court also concedes that there are ongoing factors that, when applied to that test, reasonable, articulable facts that continue the suspicion that is going on throughout the timeline.
But you would agree that no officer can use a routine traffic stop as the opportunity to just conduct a general interrogation. If that were true, then we'd be living in a police state. There has to always be a reason for the stop and a reason for the detention. And once that reason ends, the detention has to end.
Yes. But the detention can continue as factors and answers and issues and reasonable suspicions, reasonable articulable suspicions, continue to go on through the stop. And that's what happened here. Because shortly after that, the officer, in reviewing the rental agreement, is at the point of telling him, you know, it won't be long here, and we'll finish this up. He's going to go and check the VIN numbers. He goes up to confirm the VIN numbers. Upon being there for a couple minutes, he visits with Mary, defendant's wife, and finds out some different stories. The original story from the appellant is that he's driving from the state of Washington to New York to pray for somebody. His wife isn't aware that he's praying for anybody, but that's point of the trip, that they're maybe seeing someone in Connecticut. It does matter that there are different days that we're flying home or when we're going home. This is obviously a huge trip. I think it's reasonable for the trooper to go, you know, you would think husband and wife would know when, where they're going, why they're going, what they're doing.
What happened to the wife's case? Was she charged?
She was.
And what happened to her case?
It's currently before this court also.
Oh, it is. All right.
And as it,
on this same issue? Do you know?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
We haven't seen it. An appeal must have been filed a little later. Otherwise, we would have combined these. Usually, we combine them. We don't hear these, serially.
It was filed afterwards.
Okay. Thank you.
You know, I guess it is the totality of the circumstances, but, you know, at one point, you add them up. I mean, is the license plate plus the nervousness plus the odor... I mean, where's the line, you know? What is it that actually raised a suspicion? Is it the discrepancy? I mean, it may or may not be suspicious if a husband and wife gave different answers to a question. I mean, do we just take their word that whatever it is that they are subjectively determining to be suspicious, that's okay, and we just say, well, that's fine. You know, three little kids, duffel bags, an odor of soap when there's three little kids in there. I mean, do we let the subjective determination of the officer control the courts then and saying, okay, well, that's fine, even though for us it might not have raised that kind of suspicion?
Well, Justice Konenkamp wrote in Ballard that it is an objective test, and it's measured as a totality in the light of the officer's experience. So we do need to look at the officer's experience. And a scent of odor, the trooper testified on a windy night that there was a strong odor of soap. But what really adds to the transition here is the fact also that the driver is not authorized to drive under the rental agreement. And under Lockstead, that is a basis to continue some questioning. It's then after that there's additional questions about why they're going out there, praying for someone, wife says no. As the questions go on, the trooper then asks, now what is the name of the individual you're praying for? Well, Dimitri. Okay. And then I'm visiting with the wife later on. Dimitri is the guy who prays for other people, it's found out. There's some confusion. And it goes back to, well, what's Dimitri's last name? A very legitimate, continued question from the trooper. He doesn't know. Ask appellant where Dimitri lives. Doesn't know. Thinks maybe his wife might know. Okay, these are reasonable, articulable suspicions that the trooper's going to have as he walks through this timeline.
Mr. Stroman, maybe it's a little off the path, but what I'm a little bit lost on why different names on the contract with the driver and the passenger. That may be a contract violation with the rental company, but why would that raise any questions for the troopers? He could have ticketed him for a stolen car? Is that what does that have to do with an objective test?
It you're right. It's a contract issue between them and the rental. But this court has stated in Lockstead that becomes a point of continued questions. And it may be for many reasons. It may be as a result of a potential stolen vehicle or someone unauthorized to drive. It may be whether or not this person has a driver's license.
Did the officer indicate why that was made him suspicious in the testimony?
No. So if you go on and look at this timetable, it's at about 15 minutes into the stop when the trooper asks the appellant regarding the subjects of drugs. And then there is a substantial change in his demeanor. Becomes quiet, rigid, the trooper testifies. When the specific subject of marijuana is dropping his head, giving all kinds of nonverbals to the trooper, that there's a problem here. So at 10:06, which is about 21 minutes after the stop, the appellant then admits that there may be personal amounts of marijuana found in the vehicle. After that, there is the drug dog is taken out, and approximately, I believe, 33.71 pounds of marijuana found in the vehicle with a street value of about $400,000.
2 minutes.
The real focus of this case is not a timeline, a stopwatch. This court has made it clear that the standard is whether or not there is a reasonable, articulable suspicion that the person involved in the criminal activity unrelated to the traffic violation. And I submit to this court that upon reading the trooper's testimony, he continues to walk through those steps. Every question, every matter that he checks next comes up a conflict, comes up unresolved. And as a result, when the objective test is the totality in the light of the officer's experience, the state would maintain that the detention was reasonable. And as a result, not only the stop, but the subsequent seizure is lawful. And there's no other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Stroman. Ms. Hofer, you have 10 minutes.
If one listens to the audio tape of the stop and even reading the trooper's testimony from the suppression hearing, that Mrs. Littlebrave and Mr. Littlebrave gave totally different stories. As I indicated previously, their date of departure was different and what they were going to be doing was different. Other than that, the stories were consistent. It was not totally different stories. Our position is that the officer unlawfully questioned Mr. Littlebrave after the valid traffic stop because he was detained beyond the time reasonably required to investigate the traffic infraction and issue a citation. And that is what occurred in this situation. In terms of a couple of cases, the South Dakota cases that were cited to State versus Kenyon is, in my mind, different because the trooper, the officer in that case, indicated or observed actual signs of drug use by the driver of the vehicle, that being constricted pupils, sweating, and slurred speech, which then led to the detention. State versus Wilson, once again, had signs of drug use, but even that case from 2004 indicated that if it is acceptable to request the driver's license, registration, proof of insurance, it should be done in a reasonable manner. In State versus Burgee, this court held that investigative detention must be temporary and last no longer than is necessary to make the stop. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals has followed Cabela's, the United States Supreme Court case of Cabela's. They found in U.S. versus Alexander, 448, Fed 3rd, 1014, that a traffic stop that was extended 4 minutes from the point at which a driver was notified he would receive a warning ticket was acceptable. So at that point, we have the 4 minutes. And I'm not putting an absolute limit on the amount of time that can be done or that a trooper can use or an officer can use. But my position is that the 20 minutes that we have here is unreasonable. Here, Mr. Littlebrave was told at 9:50 that he would receive a warning ticket. Going to check the VIN number, you're going to be on your way. Appellant asserts that he was detained unlawfully, as after this point, the detention was prolonged beyond the time reasonably required to complete the mission. At that point, actually, the mission had been completed to investigate why he was stopped and what the officer is going to do about it, and that is issue the warning ticket. And the officer had decided at that point.
Let me interrupt you at that point because
sure.
It seems to me that's the nub of this case. When was the mission completed? inconsistencies in what the officer was attorney. Mm-hmm. When was the mission?
Well, thank you. I think the initial mission was completed when the officer told him that he was going to be receiving a warning ticket for the violation of crossing the center line and crossing the fog line. And that would be my position. So anything after that, I think, needs to be, if there is going to be a detention, needs to be based upon the reasonable suspicion.
Well, but Jim, you're disregarding the authorities that say that asking about where you're going, where you're coming from, is part of a traffic stop, even though it's unrelated. The case is on hold. You can ask those kinds of questions. So that's a part of it, correct?
That is a part of it, and those questions had been asked at the time that he told him he was going to be issuing him a warning ticket for the violation. The questions had been asked, and I think it also goes back to how long can the trooper take to ask those questions? Can the trooper say, well, I haven't asked you these questions yet about where you're going. I haven't run your driver's license through. I'm not going to quite finish writing this citation yet, so I can keep you here for another hour. And I think that's the question. And I think that doing so is unreasonable and is not what the Supreme Court envisioned in the Cabela's case. And I think what is envisioned is that these stops and these investigations need to take place in a prudent manner and not simply say, I'm not quite done writing the citation yet, and I'm not going to run your license yet, although I can do that, and simply hold them there asking questions because of that. I guess in conclusion, what I'd like to leave this court with is a little bit about a discussion of the totality of the circumstances. And I understand that that's the standard here. But I think under what occurred, any of us could be subject to this 20-minute detention. The stories were not outright conflicting. And I agree with Justice Meyer-Henry when she said a husband and a wife may have different versions of what they're going to be doing on a vacation or a trip. One may think this part is important, the other may think another part is important, and that's what they're going to say. So how does that give someone suspicion that someone is using or transporting illegal drugs? And our position is that it doesn't. In terms of the nervousness factor, various courts have held that nervousness in itself is not reasonable suspicion to conduct an investigative detention. In addition to that, the trooper's own testimony was that it is not unreasonable for people to be nervous when they come into contact with him. Third, we have soap smell, which people have air fresheners in their vehicles or other things, as indicated by Justice Meyer-Henry, children in the vehicle, so that would not necessarily be out of the ordinary. And in terms of the drug source state, I guess I would just add, and I know I did state that this court has held in State versus Haar, that coming from a major source city is insufficient to provide reasonable suspicion for an investigatory detention. And it seems to me that anyone coming from the West Coast to the East Coast, no matter what state they're coming from or to, would be subject to this detention then. Because the West Coast states are always the drug source, and the East Coast are the drug destination states. And that doesn't necessarily in itself, saying you're going from there to the East Coast, make it a reasonable suspicion that you're transporting drugs. So in closing, we believe that the trial court found this investigation to probably be acceptable, but we assert that it was not acceptable. But an illegal detention that was broadened from the initial valid stop and into an unlawful seizure. And we'd ask this court to reverse the trial court's decision denying his motion to suppress.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.